It's ironic. I had to go halfway around the world to find myself.
Keep tugging at our heels. Watch us high step and be a highlight reel of how high we get. We ghost riders off the ramp. How we live defies death. Put a conscience in the genre box. Stamp a certified fresh. Bad boys.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use promo code Kyle when making your first deposit on DraftKings to receive a free contest entry today. I'm Kyle McEwen. You can find me on Twitter at RotoWireKyleNBA. And today I'm joined by Mark Roberts, you can find on Twitter at Mark F. Roberts. That's Mark with a C, like Mark Gasol. If you listen to us on iTunes and can please rate and review the podcast, that would be very much appreciated for anyone who rates and reviews us. Mark will take you on a trip around the world to help you find yourself. So please, if you have a moment, rate and review the podcast on iTunes. If you can subscribe to it as well, that would be swell too. All right, in this episode, we're going to go over the big news from Monday. We're going to go through all the games from Monday night's schedule, and then we'll go over any other notes that we have to get to that pertain to things going on the rest of this week. All right, Mark, let's get right into it. Big, sad news came out Monday morning. Jimmy Butler could miss 3 to 4 weeks, or actually 3 to 6 weeks, with a sprained elbow, but he will not require surgery. This report originally came out from Adrian Wojnarowski, where he said 3 to 4 weeks. Then the Bulls came out and said, well, it's going to be more like 3 to 6 weeks dealing with the sprained elbow injury. It's Jimmy Butler, so hopefully we can get him back in 3 weeks and he can be a part of everybody's playoff schedule. But in the interim, Taj Gibson is also going to be out for a while. He's in a walking boot. We've got Derrick Rose sidelined. I mean, there's going to be tons of value here for several players. My first reaction was, yeah, Tony Snell's going to be a decent pickup, but I don't necessarily trust Tony Snell as much as I do Aaron Brooks. So if Aaron Brooks got dropped anywhere because he didn't meet people's expectations over the weekend, then maybe go add Aaron Brooks anywhere you can. Think about adding Tony Snell if he fits your squad. And then you also have to consider looking at Nikola Mirotic as well. How do you see this breaking down? Are there any guys that you rushed out to add today, Mark?
You know, this is very similar to yours. I think Brooks is probably a must don't everywhere. Like, I think he's at 60th in our rest of season rankings. You were right on the head. You hit the nail on the head. He struggled in his first two games, but I doubt that he's going to shoot. Let's see. The first game he shot 2 of 15, and then last game he shot 5 of 17. So you can see that the shot attempts are there. I doubt that he shoots that poorly. And so I think, you know, you could see a situation where he's scoring 15 points or so a game, adding assists, getting some steals, getting some three-pointers. I think he's the guy to own. It's hard to know who's going to get standard league value. I agree with, you know, Snell's an interesting guy in that you maybe want to see what he gives you. But Brooks is the guy I think run out and grab.
Yeah, Brooks should be added everywhere. We haven't seen a gross amount of defensive stats from Tony Snell ever. So that limits his value a little bit because he's just going to give you production in pretty, I'd say, better than average scoring right now. It looks like he's been providing. Tony Snell was playing upwards of 30 minutes the last four games before these injuries happened to take Taj Gibson completely out of the equation for the immediate future and before the Jimmy Butler injury happened. So if you go back and you look at, okay, what were Tony Snell's stats as a starter this season? He wasn't too great. He started 10 games, played 29 minutes in those games, putting up 8.3 points, 3.5 rebounds, under a steal, over 1 3-pointer, shooting 45% from the field. So those are decent stats, but not great for 29 minutes a game. But he's been getting better lately. Snell scored in double digits in four straight games. And with Jimmy Butler giving up, 38, 39 minutes per game, you could see Tony Snell eat up 38 to 39 minutes per game if the Bulls don't want to put Heinrich in there for a big amount of minutes like that.
Yeah, I mean, and even if they do put Heinrich in there for a big chunk of time, like they're kind of low on the depth chart now. If you're starting Brooks and Snell, Heinrich is your backup, and then Ephon Moore might get a little bit of run. Maybe Doug McDermott gets a little bit of run, but I kind of expect all three of those guys to get big minutes.
Yeah, I think if you're looking
at about Snell and his stats when he started, though, is the thing we need to pay attention to. He just hasn't put up big numbers in a starter's role this season.
And the thing is, some of this production that's come from Snell recently, he's been putting up stats in almost unsustainable ways. So in February, Tony Snell played in 9 games. He averaged 30 minutes per game in February, put up 13.6 points per game, 2.8 rebounds, less than an assist, less than a steal, 2.7 three-pointers, but he was shooting 58% from the field and 52% from three-point land. On the season, Snell is shooting 46% from the field and 40% from three-point land. So there's some regression there, as well as it's just a weird situation because we expect Tony Snell to get more minutes, but right. His percentages, his efficiencies playing against starters and top tier players, if he does indeed move into the starting lineup, he's probably going to have, he's going to be less efficient. So there's kind of a push and a pull there about how valuable will Tony Snell actually be. And the fact that he doesn't get you those defensive stats is pretty frustrating because you were able to rely on Jimmy Butler for good steals numbers and the occasional block and things like that.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think, like I said, I think we're on the same page here. I would probably rather take a flyer on Nikola Mirotic if he's still available than pick up Snell, I think.
Yeah, Nikola Mirotic had a career-high 29 points in Sunday's game, also pulled down 9 rebounds. And we've seen Mirotic go out there and get good blocks numbers in games, get you three-pointers. He can really do a number of things out there on the court when he gets the minutes. So I'm with you. I'm going to hope that Taj Gibson has to miss a little bit more time, and we're going to be able to rely on Nikola Mirotic for a little while there. Maybe they'll use Mirotic at small forward some, so, and then push Mike Dunleavy down to shooting guard. And that might mean that Tony Snell isn't the one who gets to really capitalize on big minutes. Maybe they kind of just spread it out amongst Snell and Mirotic. So if we're going to add people, I think the Jimmy Butler, the whole Bulls situation is Aaron Brooks first, Mirotic second, Tony Snell third. And even if Tony Snell gets more minutes than Mirotic, I think Mirotic might just be the better overall player.
I completely agree.
Awesome news. Also came, good news came out about Blake Griffin. He has a chance to play as soon as Sunday against the Warriors. Sunday would mark exactly 4 weeks since Griffin was originally ruled out. He had his stitches removed from the elbow last Monday, and Coach Doc Rivers said he's been working out at full speed. Apparently, it's just, we're just kind of waiting for Griffin to get the all clear so that he can get into a game and play. And he was out with an infection in his elbow. So this isn't anything structural. For the most part, I think he should be fine coming back. The one thing that worries me a little bit is he might be a little rusty because there was a period during his recovery time where he wasn't allowed to sweat because they didn't want the injury to get infected again. So he wasn't able to go out and really kind of participate in any physical activities or anything.
Yep, that's true. I would expect, though, don't you think by now he's had some time to get back into shape? I would get him back in your lineup as soon as he's announced that he's back in the Clippers lineup.
I'm sure over the last week since he had the stitches removed, Griffin's been doing a lot of court activity and getting amped up to get going. What about DeAndre Jordan's big surge over the last couple weeks with Griffin out? Do you see Jordan playing? Do you see him like rebounding less when Griffin comes back? How do you see this all affecting each other?
I think that will definitely happen. The likelihood was that Jordan wasn't going to continue to get 20 rebounds a game. Like, we just didn't anything like that in history, but Griffin coming back won't really help either. I would expect to see a pretty immediate drop off in Jordan's rebounding numbers once Griffin gets back. He'll go back. I mean, he's still going to probably lead the league. I think he was leading the league before Griffin went out. So I think you can still expect something in the 12 to 14 range, but not these 18 to 22 to 26 rebounding totals.
I'm going to say it's not tied to Griffin as much as it's tied to his minutes. And that's because if you go back and you look at how many minutes DeAndre Jordan was playing earlier in the season, when he had 35 minutes per game in December, he was putting up 15.7 rebounds a game. And since Griffin went out, he's been playing 38, 41 minutes a game. So when he's getting that much extra time on the court, it gives him extra opportunities to get those bigger rebounding numbers. And I do think that if DeAndre Jordan's playing about 38 minutes a game, he could end up pulling down 16, 17 rebounds a game the rest of the season. And realistically, what you have to worry about is whether or not the team's going to continue to give Spencer Hawes minutes and whether or not those bench players really dig into DeAndre Jordan's minutes a little bit. I think there's an argument to be made, though, that Doc Rivers might want to give Jordan as many minutes as possible because due to this surge, there's been all this talk about, well, maybe DeAndre Jordan should be Defensive Player of the Year. If Coach Doc Rivers, who's definitely a player's coach, if he wants to help Jordan win that award, I think he's going to have to continue to give him big minutes. So I do think it's possible. Jordan's a sell-high guy right now because he's been a top five head-to-head player since Griffin went out. But yeah. I don't know if I would actually sell high on him because I think there's a good chance that he continues to dominate this way the rest of the season. I didn't think it was possible before, but then when I took a hard look at it and realized that, well, earlier in the season, there were big stretches where the Clippers were simply only playing Jordan about 33 minutes a game. And he's staying out on the court. He's not the old DeAndre Jordan that used to get into foul trouble and find his way, force himself off the court. He doesn't do that anymore. So,
but in the last five games, he's averaged 20 rebounds. In the last 10 games, he's averaged 18 rebounds. You don't think that's going to continue, do you?
I think it's very possible. Dennis Rodman used to do it.
Yeah. Okay. And to give credit to your argument a little bit, we've seen Blake Griffin take his rebounds take a hit this season. In last season, he averaged 9.5 rebounds a game in 36 minutes. This season, he's averaging in about the same amount of playing time. He's averaging 7.5 rebounds.
And I didn't look at it, but I bet if I went and I checked right now, I would see that there's less offensive rebounds because Griffin's working further away from the hoop. So he gets less of his own putbacks as well. What might be weird to see is how the Clippers play differently or if they are going to play differently when Blake Griffin returns, because I thought they were going to falter with him out of the lineup. They weren't that great earlier in the season. They would lose to all the really good teams and they would beat all the bad teams. And then something happened in the middle of the season where they started to beat the good teams as well, started to really coalesce as a team. And then Griffin went down a month ago and they just started.
We talked about them maybe missing the playoffs at that point.
Yeah, I thought it was a legit possibility, but they found a way to play better team ball with Griffin out because he is kind of like Carmelo in that he's a ball stopper. He gets it and he's going to sit there and hold it, and he's going to consider rolling to the rim, and he's a ball stopper. So, anyways, I don't think Griffin has less value when he comes back though. If he gets less touches on offense, I bet you he gets more rebounds. So, and he's going to play big minutes regardless.
Yeah, I agree. I think he'll play big minutes. I think that the rebounds come down. And like I kind of insinuated at the beginning, I don't know if that will be totally because of Griffin or just because of, some natural regression. But I think it'll be something in the 13 to 15 rebound range, which will still be the best in the league. It just won't be 20.
Absolutely. James Harden. If you were watching Sunday's game and you saw him kick LeBron James in the family jewels and you're worried that he was going to get suspended, well, your worries were justified. Harden has been suspended one game for kicking LeBron James in the groin area from Sunday's game, so he will sit out Tuesday's game. Harden was already dealing with a bruised left shoulder. He was probable for Tuesday's game when that news came out earlier in the day, so maybe this game off will be a blessing in disguise in some respect. We should see Harden back in the lineup on Wednesday when the Rockets host the Grizzlies. So not much more to read into there. What I do want to know for daily games purposes though, Mark, who the hell do they start at shooting guard and where do they get their scoring from?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. I don't know if you've watched the Rockets at all, you should be pretty worried about how this game is going to work out for them.
Yeah.
Harden is like everything for him on offense.
And they're playing against Atlanta.
Yeah. So as far as minutes go, I mean, if we stick in Beverly for the starting point guard role, I expect Jason Terry to get a few extra minutes. There'll be an interesting daily games play. He can finish your shooting guard spot. I expect Ariza to play some more minutes. and Corey Brewer probably will play in tandem a little bit more than they usually do. Maybe we'll see a little bit from KJ McDaniels or Pablo Prigioni. But, you know, I expect probably Terry and Brewer to fill in the majority of those minutes.
I think one of two things happens. Either Trevor Ariza shifts down to shooting guard and they play Josh Smith at small forward, or they just put Corey Brewer into the starting lineup as shooting guard.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, it's just going to depend what they what I think allows them to actually have a good offense without James Harden. So, because
they just punt the game and rest some players. I don't know.
That might be a really good idea with them going up against Atlanta.
Harden's been so good. It's hard to believe that they could beat Atlanta without him.
Yeah, I agree. Kyle Lowry missed Monday's game and could be out for the rest of the week, as the Raptors might look to simply just rest Lowry, try to get him back to full health, or at least as close as they can get at this point in the season. Grievous Vasquez continued to start in place of Lowry on Tuesday. And Toronto is such a frustrating team from a fantasy perspective right now. Of their five starters, three of them scored 5 points or less in Monday's game. Grievous Vasquez finished with 12 points, one rebound, five assists in 28 minutes. DeMar DeRozan, though, came out of his funk and put up 35 points, nine rebounds, five assists, two steals, one three-pointer, went to the free throw line 10 times in 38 minutes against Philadelphia on Monday. Huge game from DeRozan. If you used him in daily leagues, man, you capitalized huge. So it's just nice.
Absolutely. Lou Williams had a nice game as well. He put up 21 points, had three rebounds and five assists in a steal.
It's kind of big news, but not. Jose Calderon will not be re-examined for another 2 weeks. So does anything change here? I know that we've seen Alexi Chavez have some improved value lately. Is he somebody who you're looking at potentially adding with Calderon being out for at least another 2 weeks?
Probably not somebody I'm looking to add. I still think Langston Galloway is the primary point guard that you're going to want to add there. And I kind of expect the other guard position to the minutes to be split, be, you know, spend maybe Tim Hardaway, maybe get some minutes, just kind of like Nick-ish things that we've seen happen in other positions, just spread it between guys and not in a consistent way, game to game.
Yeah, it's really hard to rely on anybody from game to game for the Knicks. I think we talked about it yesterday. Andrea Bargnani's worth taking a flyer on for the time being. If you're a huge Tim Hardaway fan, I guess you can roll the dice there. He did score 22 points in Sunday's game. Galloway is probably the favorite because he seems to be the primary ball handler there, kind of leading the way for the Knicks. And Shved's,
and he has a consistent role. I mean, he's played pretty big minutes for several straight games.
And that's a good point. Chavez has scored in double digits in three straight games, 11 points, 11 points, and 15 points, but he's played just 19, 20, and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You don't.
Did you see the play where he drove to the basket and then kind of put his hip and then threw it up into the sky and like probably it looked like it was about 30 feet in the air and went over the basketball hoop?
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah. I thought you were gonna talk about like a good play.
No.
No, and the thing is about Chavez too. I don't trust his shooting percentage at all, so I wouldn't add him in any rotisserie leagues, even deep ones, because I would.
That's a good point.
I would hate how much it would hurt us there. All right, let's talk.
His talent.
I'm sorry.
You know what though? No, go ahead. Jose Calderon. A lot of people seem to have held on to him for seemingly way too long. So this is a good point. Like if you're still holding on to Jose Calderon, he may or may not play again, but it's time to cut bait.
Yeah, he sucks. He is not good. All right, let's talk about this Toronto-Philadelphia game a little bit more. With Kyle Lowry out, we of course had Grievous Vasquez starting for the Toronto Raptors. And then on the Philadelphia side, we had Jason Richardson out to just get some rest. They don't like playing him on the second game of back-to-backs right now. So with Richardson out, Jakarr Sampson started there in place of him. And Sampson ended up putting up just 7 points, three rebounds, four assists. Leave him on the waiver wire. Not worth using there. Robert Covington ended up sitting out the game with his elbow injury. He's got an elbow contusion that he suffered in Sunday's game, and Covington had to leave Sunday's game with the injury. it's concerning me a little bit. And at this time in the season, you don't like having dead weight on your roster. Are you considering dropping Covington to pick up a relevant player, someone like Aaron Brooks or Nikola Mirotic or Tony Snell? Is there somebody out of that group that you would drop him for? Is there somebody that you wouldn't drop Covington for?
So I think this question is entirely dependent on the league that you play in. If you have stash injured players, if you play in a rotisserie league or a weekly lock head-to-head league, or you have an injury spot, or you don't need all of your bench spots, for sure hold on to Covington. Or if you've clinched a playoff spot and can just hold on to him. If you're in a daily game or in a daily move, no game limit league, and you need to make the playoffs, I am okay dropping Covington for somebody like Aaron Brooks. I wouldn't do it for Tony Snell, I don't think. Mirotic is probably where I would have a little bit of a hard time knowing what to do there. I probably would drop him if I felt like it was going to help me make the playoffs, though.
It's kind of if you can weather the storm for another couple games,
yep,
and wait and see what's going to happen with Covington, because the dude is getting steals lately. He does it. He's averaged 1.5 steals per game in addition to the 2.4 three-pointers he's averaged per game. So you can't just completely disregard Covington just because he's on the Sixers and because he's not as sexy of a name on your team. He's been producing, and over his last five games, yeah, over his last five games, he's averaged 1.8 steals. That's elite. So definitely be careful when you're making a decision about whether or not to add or drop Robert Covington. With Covington out, they brought Henry Sims into the lineup, and Sims ended up starting at center, pushing Noel down to power forward and Mba Mute down to small forward. Sims put up 10 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. We're leaving him on the wire, right?
Yep.
All right, sounds good. JaVale McGee, in another part of Sixers news from the day, JaVale McGee was waived by the Sixers prior to Sunday's midnight deadline, where players have to be released so that they can then subsequently sign with a playoff team if they wish to, or be eligible to play on a playoff roster. So the Sixers are biting the bullet on all of his money there. It's like $13.5 million essentially they've paid. They're going to pay JaVale McGee for like the 19th overall pick in next year's draft. And that sounds like a heavy price to pay, but the thing is, that's money that was already getting paid out to the players anyways, because they were below the salary cap floor. So
exactly. And it actually saves them quite a bit of money the way that they did it. By hitting the floor, then they don't have to pay out that extra money, but they only have to pay a prorated portion of McGee's contract this season.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's a good whip. All right, let's talk about the Golden State-Brooklyn game. The Warriors fell to the Nets 110-108. Steph Curry is just so much fun to watch. The shots he makes blow my mind. We're sitting in the office, and it's a bunch of dudes who've been watching basketball for years, and we're all sitting here oohing and on and hollering. It's fun to watch him play. Leandro Barbosa was the only injury concern from the game. He had an illness and was held out of action on Monday. Not a big impact there from a fantasy perspective. In the game, we had Steph Curry put up 26 points with 7 assists. Draymond Green was pretty terrible from the field, just 1 of 5, but he pulled down 11 rebounds, 4 assists. Not much else going on there. The frustrating thing in this Brooklyn and Golden State game is on the Brooklyn side, and it's because we saw Mason Plumlee have a good game in their last game, and then on Monday he plays just 22 minutes, 7 points, 7 rebounds, and Brook Lopez, who had played just 15 minutes in their last game, comes out and plays 26 minutes off the bench, puts up 26 points, 6 rebounds. You can't trust anybody on this Brooklyn team right now from game to game.
No, you can't. Darren Williams seems to have carved out a nice role lately in the last 5 or 10 games, and Joe Johnson always gets his 34 to 36 minutes. But other than that, I'm not sure that you would bet much that any other player is going to be over 30 minutes in a given game.
Yeah, I think Darren Williams, he's been really good, actually. He 17.6 points, 4.2 rebounds, 5.4 assists, 1.2 steals, 1.6 three-pointers, shooting 43% from the field as a point guard is good, and then 82% from the line over his last five games, playing 34 minutes. Deron Williams is good. It's just, it's the rest of the team. It's the fact that people can't have any confidence in Brook Lopez, Thaddeus Young, or Mason Plumlee from night to night. And even Joe Johnson had a terrible game on Monday, putting up just 5 points, six rebounds, three assists in 36 minutes. I mean, Joe Johnson only took seven shots. Like, it's just bizarre. Whatever. All right, moving on. From the Phoenix and Miami game, this was awesome. You've got Dragic getting into foul trouble, played just 15 minutes. But in those 15 minutes, Goran Dragic put up 21 points, four rebounds, one assist, one steal, two three-pointers, went to the free throw line nine times. There he drew a flagrant foul from his ex-teammate, I believe it was Markieff Morris, who fouled him hard up at the rim. Hassan Whiteside and Alex Len got into a kerfuffle where Hassan Whiteside went up for a dunk. He comes down. His arm ends up laying across Len's face, and Len got pissed about it, grabbed Hassan Whiteside, kind of threw him to the side, down onto the ground. And as Hassan Whiteside got back up and turned towards Len, he wrapped him up with a form tackle like he was playing football and just pulled him to the ground. And both players ended up getting ejected, and I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know about you, Mark, but I wouldn't be surprised if both these guys get some kind of suspension out of this.
Yeah, we were talking before. You thought maybe one or two games
each. Yeah, I think maybe one game or two games for Len for being the instigator, and then one game for Whiteside. It kind of depends on whether or not the league looks at Whiteside's arm coming down across Len's face as he comes off the rim. If they look at that and say, okay, that's Whiteside trying to instigate it, or if they say that Len instigated it. Maybe they decide they can't really tell, and they just punish both of them with a couple of games or maybe just one game. But it'll be interesting to see how that all breaks down. Tyler Johnson of the Miami Heat put up 26 points, was 10 of 13 from the field, 3 of 3 from three-point line, had four steals, one rebound, one assist in 26 minutes off the bench. It doesn't mean anything, or does it?
If you played him in a daily fantasy league tonight, that's probably was a good thing. Otherwise, I don't think that this is something that we can rely on happening in the future. We've seen him have periodically like nice games, but there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to when he gets minutes or when he scores big in those minutes.
Yeah, and don't go chasing Tyler Johnson. He was a DNPCD the three previous games for the Miami Heat. So. That's some pretty volatile value there. Dwayne Wade had 16 points and 9 assists in the game to go with 4 steals. And Whiteside, before he got ejected, had 17 points, 10 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks. Luol Deng put up 12 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 assist. And Udonis Haslem moved back into the starting lineup in this game, starting over Henry Walker, who had started the last game for the Miami Heat. Walker played just 12 minutes off the bench, which was devastating, I'm sure, for a lot of people's daily games lineups on Monday. Michael Beasley played 26 minutes off the bench, 6 of 10 from the field, put up 12 points, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 1 block, to show you a little bit of what he does. I saw a tweet before the game that Tyler Johnson was getting three-point shooting lessons from Michael Beasley, and that scared me a little bit.
It seemed to work. You did okay tonight.
I guess so. TJ Warren got 15 minutes for Phoenix. That's kind of cool. He's their rookie, kind of a tweener, small forward, power forward.
You care about Beasley going back to him?
Do I care about Beasley?
And from a fantasy perspective, do you care that he got 12 points and 6 rebounds?
No.
Okay.
I don't trust him. And it would take. Thing is, I don't think I would. If he puts up consistent stats for another couple games, and then we hear something about how the team is really impressed with how he's changed and they're going to give him bigger minutes and they're going to move him into the starting lineup, I'll take a flyer.
Okay.
Until then,
but that's
though,
what it would take to get you to that point.
Beasley was the number one option on the Phoenix Suns a couple of years ago, and he could not do anything. Mm-hmm. So I don't trust that he's found a way and that he now knows exactly what he needs to do to be consistent going forward. I just don't trust it. Chris Anderson was able to play for the Heat on Monday. He missed their last game with an illness, so he ended up playing 14 minutes off the bench. Whatever. Brandon Knight, who was questionable with a hip injury that he suffered in Saturday's game, was able to play and start for the Suns. Brandon Knight ended up playing 40 minutes, put up 13 points, 7 assists, 3 of 12 from the field, 5 of 6 from the line. So it's good to see that Brandon Knight was able to be healthy and play through everything. All right, let's talk about the Clippers and Minnesota game. You actually watched a lot of this, didn't you, Mark?
Yeah, it was a pretty entertaining game.
Yeah, and we saw Matt Barnes sat out the game with his hamstring injury that he suffered in Sunday's game. Barnes suffered this hamstring injury in the second quarter of Sunday's game, was able to return, finish out the game, but after Sunday's game, Coach Doc Rivers said, we're not going to play him on Monday if the injury isn't 100%. So they ended up starting Jordan Hamilton, who's currently on a 10-day deal with the team. And Hamilton put up 10 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist in 26 minutes. Also hit 2 3-pointers. I'm not bullish on Hamilton. I don't think Barnes is necessarily probably going to miss much time with this hamstring injury if he was able to play through it on Sunday. Plus Hamilton again is just on a 10-day deal right now. On the Minnesota side of things, Nikola Pekovic and Kevin Martin both missed the game. Pekovic sat out with soreness in his ankle. Martin sat out the game due to an illness. We saw Gary Neal start in place of Martin and Gorgui Jang start in place of Pekovic. Jang put up 10 points, 11 rebounds, 2 blocks in 39 minutes. Gotta love the damn minutes he's getting. You wish we'd see Jang get a little bit more scoring though. But Gary Neal had a heck of a game, man.
Yeah, he played 41 minutes in it, filling in for Kevin Martin. He scored 19 points, had 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal. He only shot 6 of 17 from the field and 2 of 7 from the 3-point line. But it's a nice game. If anybody took the flare on him to play him in a daily league over Kevin Martin, you were sure rewarded.
Yeah, and that's where the daily lineups page we have on RotoWire can be really awesome. Is if you're watching before the game, as soon as the news comes out, we go in there, we change the daily lineups, and that can help you kind of make any last-minute changes for your daily games if you're using that. Jamal Crawford suffered a calf contusion in the first half of the Clippers game on Monday and was not able to return. He played just 11 minutes, put up 9 points, 2 rebounds. Austin Rivers ended up playing 25 minutes. And maybe that's one reason why Jordan Hamilton actually got 26 minutes is because Jamal Crawford was out too. You were watching this game. Can you tell us how was there anything crazy about this Austin Rivers KG double technical that happened?
No, they've just gotten into an argument.
I wanted to hear that it was like KG just going flames coming out of his ears and stuff.
I didn't totally understand why Austin Rivers got a technical out of the deal, but Kevin Garnett was pretty up. He was pretty fired up, but I guess I would say it was a garden variety technical foul from Kevin Garnett, which is pretty high threshold. But there was a number of technical fouls. J.D. Redick got ejected from the game. Spencer Hawes got a technical foul. The box score I'm looking at says Rivers had 2 fouls. I don't remember him getting ejected, but maybe he did, or maybe Doc Rivers got one and Austin Rivers got one. No, that's what it was.
Oh, and then they got confused in the box score?
Yeah, the announcers were talking about it. They said it was the first father-son combo to ever get a technical foul, both get a technical foul in the same game.
You know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so they can pay their fine together. It was a bizarre game. Chris Paul was basically felt like was by himself at the end of the game because Spencer Hawes has been playing so poorly. DeAndre Jordan couldn't touch the ball in the last 2 minutes. And then with Redick out, with Jamal Crawford out, it was pretty much just Chris Paul finishing up the game.
But he did it. They won 110-105.
He sure did.
And Rubio had a triple-double. 18 points, 12 rebounds, 11 assists, 1 steal, 1 3-pointer. And the Timberwolves, only one player didn't score in double digits for the Timberwolves. They had seven players finished in double digits.
Only one person in their starting lineup didn't play 40 minutes.
That's insane.
So, I mean, that's why you can see I think as we watch the Timberwolves going forward, like Gary Neal played 41 minutes. So if anybody is out for them, I think their backup is a good play in daily games. Like if Kevin Martin isn't out, Gary Neal is going to get big minutes. Or if Rubio's out, then Zach LaVine's going to get big minutes.
All right, let's talk about this Pelicans-Dallas game. The Mavericks won 102-93. We had Tyson Chandler sitting out for Dallas, and Bernard James ended up starting at center. I didn't realize this over the weekend, but in Dallas's last game, they started Dirk Nowitzki at center, and they started Richard Jefferson at power forward with Jose Barea at small forward.
Like, yeah, and they played Rondo Ellis and Barea.
Yeah. And Barea was essentially the nominal small forward, which is just hilarious. That was against Brooklyn, though. So you kind of understand with them using Joe Johnson as the power forward, it makes sense. You can match up Richard Jefferson right there and the rest of the guys. Because you can guard Allen Anderson with, you know, a stalk of corn. So it's okay. Chandler Parsons also sat out the game with Richard Jefferson in the starting lineup once again. And then on the Pelican side, you had, of course, Anthony Davis, Ryan Anderson, and Drew Holiday still out for them. Bernard James ended up finishing with 0 points.
He took one shot attempt.
At least he knows what he's supposed to do. Go out there and rebound and block shots. So 6 rebounds, 2 blocks. Jefferson, 16 points, 5 rebounds. He's been a decent play in daily games some of the nights recently. So
I think we suggested him for a daily play last night. It worked out pretty well.
Now, Rondo, we've been talking about how we've dropped him recently, and he went out and he put up 19 points, 5 rebounds, just 2 assists, 1 3-pointer, but he took 15 shots. Does that change your perception of Rondo at all? Right now?
No, in fact, it probably makes it worse because he had 5 rebounds and 2 assists and 0 steals. Like the way I look at that box score, that's not a good game for Rondo. I don't see the 19 points and 15 shot attempts as something that's sustainable. And if he's not, I really believe if he's not putting up big stats in those other categories, he's just not ownable. Like he's not going to shoot 60%. He's not going to shoot 15 times a game. We're going to expect to see 8 to 10 points a game from him. So I just think that this was a random fluctuation. And the assists just aren't there for him.
Yeah, Rondo's last 4 games that he's played in, he hasn't recorded a single steal. And
that's huge.
It is. That's one of the things that he was always really good at. And it goes in kind with his assist. If he's not getting you assists on steals, then the value for Rondo is pretty much non-existent.
Yep. He's basically capable of being really, really good in 2 categories, and in that being assists and steals, and pretty good in rebounds. And then you just live with the rest of it. And those steals and assists just aren't there.
Alexis Ajinsa has been a pretty good daily games play as well. And he finished with 13 points, 12 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block in Monday's game, playing 25 minutes off the bench. Norris Cole finished with 19 points in 36 minutes. Why are you laughing?
I was trying to figure out which one I believed in less, Norris Cole shooting 8 of 12 or Rondo shooting 9 of 15.
I think it's the 6 of 1, half dozen of another or something like that. Yeah, whatever that saying is. Not a lot to see here. Dante Cunningham starting in place of Anthony Davis. Quincy Pondexter in the lineup, and Pondexter and Cunningham had a couple of good games there, and what their salary was on daily games, it was worth taking a flyer on them these last couple games, but they've kind of been not being as productive as they were for the first couple games when they moved into the starting lineup. So I'm starting to fade away from those guys as well. Dirk Nowitzki, 14 points, 8 rebounds. They just don't, even with guys out, they don't play Dirk Nowitzki more than the 28 to 31 minutes that they play him this year. So, that's rough, because usually when you're looking at it and you say, okay, Tyson Chandler's out, you got Chandler Parsons out, there's going to be extra possessions, extra minutes there, more importantly, for Dirk Nowitzki to get on the court and be productive. It's frustrating me to see Rondo taking more shots than Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah, so. Totally agree. I think they're just trying to manage his workload until they get to the playoffs.
Absolutely. All right, that's it for the five games for Monday. Let's talk about some other updates going into games for Tuesday and Wednesday. Piro Antic, DeMar Carroll, Al Horford, and Jeff Teague all sat out the last game for the Atlanta Hawks, and they practiced Monday, though, and they're all going to be available for Tuesday's game. Teague will start, DeMar Carroll will start, and Al Horford will start with Piro Antic coming off the bench. So those guys are all good to go. Kelly Olynyk, who was maybe going to be available for Sunday's game, did not play Sunday. He remains questionable for Tuesday's game. Quote from him was, his ankle is feeling a little bit better each day, but sometimes he has setbacks. We've already talked about him kind of ad nauseum. Olynyk's a decent stash candidate right now. I am a little bit worried about him actually getting enough minutes when he comes back to be of use in standard league. So if there's somebody good out there, the Chicago guys, if Olynyk's the only guy who you're, or the worst guy on your team, I would be fine picking up the Chicago guys and dropping Olynyk for them. How do you feel about that?
What's the worry for you? I'm a little bit worried about him for a different reason. I'm worried about whether he's actually going to be able to get over this injury or not. I'm not worried about the minutes, though. What's worrisome to you about the minutes?
No, I mean, I don't think that he'll play big minutes because of the injury.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I wasn't reflecting on the whole Bass and Tyler Zeller and Jonas Jerebko kind of thing going on there in the front court. It's more the ankle being an issue. So,
because even if he comes back, you know, say he comes back the next game or two, considering the injury, there's a chance that he plays 12 minutes and then 15 minutes and then 20 minutes. Like, it won't be a Blake Griffin type of return that we're expecting.
Yeah, we've seen guys come back from ankle injuries before, and they, like you said, they just get like little dribbles of minutes. Okay, we'll increase it a little bit, then a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Nick Young is questionable for Tuesday's game against the Hornets. Young has missed the last three games because of swelling in his left knee. If Nick Young sits out, you're looking at Jordan Clarkson, Wayne Ellington, and Jeremy Lin being the primary benefactors that I've noticed over the last couple games.
Yeah, I don't think Nick Young specifically is ownable even when he comes back. He's played so few minutes and not put up very good production this season.
No, in fact, I think Nick Young's greatest value this season in fantasy is happening right now, in that with him out, other players are getting better value in fantasy. CJ Miles has been trying to address his flat feet, which has led to some soreness in his feet. Miles has been testing out support for his flat arches, and that explains why he's been bothered by soreness lately. Man, I don't know. For anybody out there who, as you get older and you notice how much your shoes matter, I can't tell you. Yeah. I've bought shoes in the last few years, and it seems like one out of every three pairs actually is comfortable to me.
This was one of the most interesting notes I'd seen all season. This was pretty interesting to read and learn about that. It seems like a bizarre time to try to address your flat feet issue in your career. Like, he's probably 10 seasons in, midway through the season. Seems like a bizarre time to go for it, but I guess whatever works for him.
Hey, I'm just excited to see him trying to improve what is a pretty terrible resume in the NBA. OJ Mayo will not play in Tuesday's game against the Nuggets as he continues to sit out with his hamstring injury. This will be the third time in the last four games that Mayo has sat out. Jared Dudley, who's dealing with a knee issue, practiced Monday and said that he will play in Tuesday's game against the Nuggets. Vince Carter has been deemed questionable for Tuesday's showdown versus the Jazz. Carter's been out for about a month now, with a foot issue, so it's good to hear that he's coming back. Vince Carter still has a highlight play every once in a while. I like him. I like that he's still hanging around the NBA.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's all I've got for standard league notes. Do you got anything else, Mark?
Nope.
Tight money. Let's take a look at DraftKings. There are seven games on Tuesday. Who are we looking at point guard, Mark? Who do you like there?
All right, so the first guy that I wanted to talk about was Michael Carter-Williams. He's listed for 6,900. We know that he's coming back from injury, and we kind of, like we just talked about, where we see these players come back in kind of progressive amounts of minutes. So 3 games ago, he played 18 minutes. Then 2 games ago, he played 27 minutes. Last game, he played 30 minutes. He put up 33 DraftKings points. He had 4 steals in that game. And something I noticed when I was looking at some of the Bucks players, a lot of them are having close to career highs or career highs in steals. And I think that has a lot to do with the Bucks' defensive system that's gotten quite a bit of a praise this season. And I think, you know, probably it's one of the reasons they acquired Michael Carter Williams. So we saw a lot of steals for him when he came into the league. We kind of saw that dip. I wonder if that will kind of dip back up or come back up as he gets acclimated into that defensive system. And that will certainly help his daily league's value.
Yeah, no, I can definitely get behind that. At 6,900, MCW still has a really high ceiling. Yep. And the one thing that you're just waiting for it all to come together more than anything else. So who else are you looking at point guard that you'll consider using for your games on Tuesday?
The other two guys I saw that we've already kind of talked about, Langston Galloway, he's at 4,900. He's kind of one of the only sure things on the Knicks. They have a nice matchup with the Kings, who are the second most favorable matchup to point guards this season. And in the past five games, he's had 3 30-plus DraftKings point nights. And so I like him. And then Aaron Brooks is the other guy that we've talked about a little bit already, but with all the injuries in Chicago, there should be plenty of shots to go around. I expect his field goal percentage to regress towards the mean and come back up a little bit. So 4,600, I think he's an interesting play as well.
Yeah, I can get behind that. Who are you looking at shooting guard?
So in Houston with Harden out, Jason Terry is listed for only $3,200. I liked him. I didn't see a lot of other shooting guards I like. Lance Stevenson, I think if you want to be a little bit risky, has an interesting matchup. He's against the Lakers, who we know give up a lot of DraftKings points. He's had some ups and downs. He's starting to get a little bit more steady playing time in between 20 and 30 minutes. So I think I certainly wouldn't play him in like a 50-50, but if you were in a tournament and wanted to kind of roll the dice, I think considering the lack of other good options, he's somebody to maybe throw in there and hope he just has one of those big games that he's had every once in a while recently.
I know I'm going to get Bradley Beal into one of my lineups on DraftKings for Tuesday. He's just 5,500, played 33 minutes in his return to action against Detroit on Saturday, and playing against the Chicago team that is beat up with no Jimmy Butler to guard him at shooting guard. I really like that situation for Bradley Beal, for him step up and show that, you know, the time he had off, those eight games, are really going to be, he's going to be healthy and good to go for that. If somebody wanted to take a flyer on Tim Hardaway Jr. at 4,200, I think that's worth doing considering he played 32 minutes and then 35 minutes the last couple games. I don't like Tim Hardaway's ceiling, but at 4,200, if he scores 25 points, you're getting plenty good value. And then Corey Brewer at 4,000. We've seen Corey Brewer put up crazy stat lines this season in limited minutes off the bench. If they cut him loose, he could end up having a really big game against Atlanta. So just keep an eye out for that. What about at small forward? Who are you looking at there?
So once again, with the injuries in Chicago, I think Tony Snell at $3,600 is a pretty safe bet to exceed his DraftKings salary. I forget how to say this guy's name. The guy in Denver?
Joffrey Lavernier.
Lavernier. He's like a center, isn't he?
They've got him listed as small forward, and they've been using him as a power forward more than anything, I think.
Yeah, so DraftKings is a small forward. He's had a few nice games recently. He's listed for $3,400. I mostly just wanted to point out that I was surprised he was a small forward, but, you know, potentially could be an interesting play as well.
You're not taking a risk on KJ McDaniels for tomorrow, are you?
No.
I should say tonight for when people are listening to this.
He would have to play like 20 to 24 to justify his salary, I think. And I don't know that I'm sure that's going to happen.
I want to tell everybody to make sure to stay away from Jonas Derebko. He had two crazy games for the Celtics last week on the 25th and the 27th. But then on Sunday, he put up just 10 fantasy points on DraftKings, 3 points, 2 rebounds in 12 minutes. Just don't. Okay.
Wouldn't it be cool if on DraftKings there was a way to like short a player or go against him? Like you could put...
Oh, bet against a player?
Yeah, you could put Jarepko at that salary in your like anti lineup and then watch him do poorly.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome, actually.
That would be fun.
Would you do Trevor Ariza at 5,900? I feel like that's getting... He's been actually pretty decent lately on DraftKings. because he goes out and he gets those big steals numbers from game, you know, every once in a while. He's kind of interesting. Three out of his last four games, Ariza has scored 30 or more points on DraftKings.
Yeah, just the way that he plays is sort of risky. I think that, you know, a lot of the volume three-point shooting, which can go one way or the other, makes him a little bit risky to play in, like, 50-50s. But, again, I think a very interesting play in, like, tournaments or where you have lower odds to just stick him in there and hope that he's the guy that benefits from Harden being out.
I'm getting more and more bullish on Josh Smith because of the whole Atlanta aspect of things.
Ooh, you think there's some bad blood there?
I mean, he wanted the hell out of there. You know? He was happy to go to a team in the Pistons who actually wanted him and wanted to pay him the money. So I would also consider using Rudy Gay at 7,700 because he's playing New York.
Like, that's a good point.
Like, try to guard me, Clay Anthony, early. Have fun. Are you at all thinking about LeBron James, 10,400 against Boston? Do you think that he might want to kind of shove something down somebody's throat after the controversial game on Sunday against Houston?
Yeah, that might be. I mean, we saw him kind of make some comments on Twitter, I think, and after the game about how basically he felt bad about missing those free throws. That's an interesting play. I mean, if you can get him into your lineup, and you certainly could, like, with if you went with Brooks and Jason Terry and Tony Snell and some lower price guys, you could get him in there. I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah, I could get down on that too. You know, one guy we haven't talked about from Chicago is Pau Gasol, and he's 9,500 on DraftKings. I don't know that I love him going up against Nene and or Gortat as much as I would another team's front court, but Pau Gasol, he only scored 4 points in their last game, still pulled down 15 rebounds Sunday, and there's just whenever I see somebody really, really, really suck one game, it makes me think that they're going to come back the next game and be like, no, I'm going to put in the extra work the next day, and I'm going to come in and I'm going to get some big buckets. So I would consider even using Pau Gasol, even though he's 9,500 and the most expensive power forward for Tuesday's game. So I would consider looking there. Who do you got at power
all the
forward?
Big men, yeah, all the big men that I found that I liked were playing against the Lakers, which shouldn't be a surprise to anybody who's listened this year. The Lakers are notorious for giving up DraftKings points to big men. So I think Cody Zeller's at 4,300, Marvin Williams at 3,200. I think both of them will probably have a great shot at exceeding their value, their salary value. And then at center, Al Jefferson at 7,800. I like getting him into my lineup against that Laker team.
And I think you at power forward, you have to look at Mirotić, obviously.
Yep.
Through three games against Washington, though, this season up to this point, he's played just 15 minutes per game in those games. 8.3 points, 4.7 rebounds. So not the most sexy stats in the world, but after that 29-point outing on Sunday, Mirotić is interesting at the $4,400 salary that he's sitting at power forward. And you said Al Jefferson at center, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, I would be fine with that play. I might look at using Marcin Gortat against Chicago. Again, I kind of just want to attack that team right now because they're in turmoil. They've got so many injuries eating them up right now. And Gortat's coming off a big game against Detroit where he put up 49.75 DraftKings points. He's 5,700. It's a reasonable price tag. He's been doing better lately, really working the boards, pulling down double-digit rebounds in each of his last four games. So, yeah, you can consider using Gortat. Not the most consistent option, but I would look at him at 5,700, especially when you consider that Rudy Gobert costs $6,700 salary. It's like if I can save $1,000 and use Gortat over Gobert, I would consider doing that. Those are all the picks I have. Do you got anything else?
No more picks for me.
Tight money, dog. All right, that's it. That's all we got for the show today. Thank you so much for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use promo code Kyle when making your first deposit on DraftKings to receive a free contest entry today. If you've been listening to the show pretty much every day, you might notice that we've been playing around with the format lately. If you like any particular format, holler at me on Twitter, please. You can find me on Twitter at RotoWireCalNBA. And my friend over here is Mark Roberts.
I'm on Twitter at Mark F. Roberts, with Mark with a C. Or the other thing you could do, Kyle, is you could leave some feedback in the iTunes rating.
Oh, yeah, you could do that as well. You're smart, Mark. Yeah, leave an iTunes rating and just let us know what you want us to change. And that's actually one of the reasons why we did start to look at changing the format a little bit, is because some people kind of commented that, like, it's just too helter-skelter in some respects. But, you know, be what it be, it do what it do. Mark, I love you.
I love you too, Kyle. See you later.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You, I know it's me. We both carry grudges, a bogus beef. I'd love to love you, but so does he. What we want, girl, just can't be. Life is chocolate, so bittersweet. You don't know what you're getting with me. You don't know what you've given to me. I ask you, give in to me. I'll try my hardest, curtain scene. I wasn't acting, just practicing. Oh, fulfilling all your needs. Coco brother here to please. I refuse to beg. I'm not TLC. I'm walking Harley, Dewey C. Got my knees about to bleed. I never fail. Why can't you believe in me? I tell you what, girl, I will succeed. I will achieve to be or not to be. With the bullshit, miss me, please. I know you and I got a history. If there's no competition, why we gotta compete? Girl, why we even talking? Let your actions speak. With the bullshit, miss me, please. I know you and I got a history. If there's no competition, why we gotta compete? Girl, why we even talking? Let your actions speak. It's not you, I know it's me. We both hate each other, let's just be free. You hate to love me, I'm an absentee. We don't do a thing but disagree. Life is fragile, but I guarantee that we'll both be happy when you let me be. You say it's all good, life's a cup of tea, but I can still smell shit through the potpourri. I've tried so hard, I've given my all. I know you're scarred, you know I'm hard-headed. Love you more than I said it. Shredded letters that I'm penning in an effort to forget it. I've tried to pretend it. I'm afraid that I regret it if I just broke out. I'm trapped in my head and can't choke this doubt. When the thoughts that I evoke are used against me to provoke, pride and piss me off, it's like a practical joke. With the bullshit, miss me, please. I know you and I got a history. If there's no competition, why we gotta compete? Girl, why we even talking? Let your actions speak. With the bullshit, miss me, please. I know you and I got a history. If there's no competition, why we gotta compete? Girl, why we even talking? Let your actions speak. What if it's not just me, but maybe you? Everything you did for our relationship, I did too. When you were good, baby, yo, I was too. But when you cheated on the show, I did too. But when we loved each other, yo, we had proof. Don't tell me that he's just a friend, I'm no fool. No stepping stone stool, I'm ice cold to make me lose my cool. My heart, head, and body is about to throw a coup. The tide kinda got me distraught. Underneath your pretty, it's some really crazy ass thoughts and views. I'm patting down your blurred lines, but I'm sick, thick, and confused. Your little white lies robbing the truth. The real you broke out of the shell, and apart we grew. To hell with you. We're no longer in sync, I'm gone, we're through. Leave a message at the I'll get back to you. With the bullshit, miss me, please. I know you and I got a history. If there's no competition, why we gotta compete? Girl, why we even talking? Let your actions speak. With the bullshit, miss me, please. I know you and I got a history. If there's no competition, why we gotta compete? Girl, why we even talking? Let your actions speak.